This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Couch Potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, Deepwater Horizon, Masterminds, Queen of Katwe, and Clown Town. It's officially starting October this weekend, so I can really delve into the horror movies. And that's what I'm going to be doing with Clown Town. But I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and, of course, the Home Cinema Roundup, plus a chance for you to win a copy of Dinesh D'Souza's movie, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, available in about 2 weeks on DVD. But you can win one here free of charge. I'll tell you how to do that later in the show. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Relatively slow week for news in the movies. The one piece that really kind of rose to the top, that caught my eye, was because of the huge success of The Jungle Book, the new one that came out just this spring, directed by Jon Favreau. Jon Favreau has now been brought in by Disney to do a... I'm going to put this in, I got my fingers in air quotes, but you can't see it, but a live action version of The Lion King. First of all, it's not live action. It's CGI. It's computer generated. It's no more live action than Avatar was live action. You just think it's live action because the computer fools your mind. It looks photorealistic, but it's sort of like Dinosaur back in 2000 with, it was a Disney movie with dinosaurs, or even when they made that other dinosaur movie, Walking with Dinosaurs, about 3-4 years ago, or when they made Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within. These were all photorealistic CGI movies that are not actually live action. In The Jungle Book, the only thing that was live action was Mowgli. Now, there was motion capture for all these characters, but Mowgli was the only thing live. It was shot in a parking lot, essentially. It was shot on a stage. All the gorgeous jungle landscapes and the sunsets and the trees and the rocks, and that was all created in a computer. It looks great, but it's not a live-action movie. I mean, Mowgli is. It's a CGI movie, and that's the same thing with The Lion King. The Lion King's gonna be completely CGI because there's no human characters in that movie. The only pitfall I see for this, as much as everyone loves The Lion King, The Lion King is not my favorite Disney animated film. From that run, I thought that Beauty and the Beast and was far superior, and I love both Little Mermaid and Aladdin. You know, so The Lion King was good, but I never fell in love with it, even after my kids watched it 500 million times on DVD. But The Lion King is almost too recent. I mean, yeah, it's been over 20 years since it came out. It still feels too recent. It still feels like it's kind of part of the whole zeitgeist that was already around. And even when Disney was doing those direct-to-video sequels like The Lion King 2.5 and The Lion King 2 Simba's Pride, it just still felt much more recent. And part of the thing that was with the charm of The Jungle Book is The Jungle Book was the original Disney animated film was so a piece of its time. It had the look and the feel and the actors and the music that was all just said that was essential 60s Disney. And sure, you can already make that argument and say that the look and the feel and the actors and the songs for The Lion King are essential Disney from the 90s. But everyone's still alive. I mean, here's my question. Are they going to get the same voices? Are they going to get Matthew Broderick to do Simba? Are they going to get James Earl Jones to do his father? Are they going to get Jeremy Irons to be in it? Are they going to get Moira Kelly to be? Are they going to get Nathan Lane? it seems a little odd to me that they would do that. It just seems like it needed to sit on the shelf longer. Because part of the thing with the Jungle Book, it was the Favreau's Jungle Book was so vastly different. Filmmaking is so different now than it was in the 1960s, and you can do stuff on screen with a kids' movie back then that doesn't quite work as well now. But they're going forward with it, and I mean that makes sense. But even like when they did Maleficent, it was going off of Sleeping Beauty. Well, my God, Sleeping Beauty was what, the late 50s? Or even in the 90s when they made the live-action version of 101 Dalmatians, that original movie came out in the early 60s. It had been out for so long, and nobody involved was even alive anymore. I mean, the Lion King, you could just redo it. Elton John can do the songs for it. This is Disney's game plan now, is remaking all their stuff in live-action. They did it with Cinderella. They're doing it with Beauty and the Beast. But at least Beauty and the Beast is an authentic live-action movie. I mean, they got Emma Watson in it, actually physically in a castle. I'm sure the Beast is going to be fully CGI. I don't know. I just, there seems to be some potential pitfalls with this one. And also because filmmaking was so different, the Jungle Book, the Favreau version could be wildly, no pun intended, it could be wildly different. It could be quite disparate from the original. Whereas the original, you could, if you tried to just remake that original, and just use CGI characters instead of cell animated characters, it just would seem really goofy nowadays. So they updated it. But how do you update Lion King? Lion King kind of works today. It isn't a relic of its time the way the Jungle Book is. I mean, who knows? I mean, Jon Favreau is a great director, and he's done some great, even stuff that I tend to like that some people don't. I liked Iron Man 2. I liked Cowboys vs. Aliens. So this has a potential to be great, but it also it might just feel like, well, why don't I just go watch the original I got on DVD or Blu-ray? You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Fences. Opens on Christmas, and it stars Denzel Washington in, I think it's his third directing effort.
A man is supposed to take care of his family. You live in my house, fill your belly with my food, put your behind on my bed because you're my son. It's my duty to take care of you. I owe a responsibility to you. I ain't got to like you. Now, I don't give you everything I got to give you. I give you your life. It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you. I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot as you.
This reminds me a lot of Denzel Washington's first movie, Antoine Fisher. I mean, it's a very different story, but it has that level of intensity. His movie, The Great Debaters, that was okay for what it was, but it wasn't as visceral as Antoine Fisher was. Antoine Fisher had a lot of misery to it, just sort of woven into the story, which I thought came across well in the film. This one looks like it's going to have that because it's this father-son struggle, and it looks like it's going to, obviously, in the trailer, it's just dealing with the regrets of what you can't do once you have kids and you have to be the father, and you don't have to like them, but you have a responsibility to them. I mean, I think there's a certain innate humanity to liking your own kids, but who knows? I mean, this is just a short trailer. The 1-2 punch between this and that one I talked about a couple weeks ago with Will Smith, this is Hollywood putting out all of its stops saying, let's not have Oscar so white again. The next one I want to talk about is Ghost in the Shell. Opens on March 31st. Stars Scarlett Johansson in a famously Japanese role that she's not Japanese in.
What are you? This is just the beginning.
There's not a whole lot to this trailer, very much like Annabelle 2, which I played last week. It's very atmospheric, and the music and the sound gives the keys to the imagery. And there's not a whole lot of dialogue, or even a sense of what the story is. And I saw Ghost in the Shell so long ago, I don't remember much about it, so I'm going to have to revisit that. But this movie looks like it could work. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Deepwater Horizon and Queen of Cutway. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Rolling into the movie reviews, we're going to kick things off with two true story. Hollywood loves true story, especially this time of year. And let me just say, just this may be a little bit spoilerish about some of my thoughts in these movies, but this September has actually been a pretty good time for movies. There have been some good, solid movies, you know, like Magnificent Seven, you had Sully. It's been a good September. Usually September's terrible. Last September, I remember that stuff like The 33, which were that early attempts at award bait movies. They just weren't very good. But this September's got some good stuff. And, you know, it sort of continues. You know, like I said, I'm showing my hand a bit here. But, this last final day of September that rolls into the first weekend of October, it's a nice little bridge to award season because, while I'm not sure that Deepwater Horizon is going to win any awards, but it definitely fits that role that like the 33 was trying to be last year. Anyways, let's talk about Deepwater Horizon. Peter Berg directs his true story about the workers on an oil rig and the disaster that resulted in the 2010 BP oil spill.
We a big company. Millions of moving parts.
Hey, how you doing, man?
We all work very hard to ensure those moving parts are functioning as a means to very profitable end for all of us.
Are you seeing this?
Get everybody off the...
We gotta go!
Oddly enough, I would go down to a news station every week back in 2010. I don't do TV right now, but I was doing TV back in 2010. And I remember every Friday going down there to review the movies and seeing just nonstop coverage of this oil spill. And you sort of hear a little bit about it, but you don't hear what led up to it as much. This is what leads up to it. And I am not always a fan of Peter Berg. I've always seen Peter Berg as a director as being a Michael Bay wannabe. And that couldn't have been more apparent than when he directed Battleship, which felt like a movie that just wanted to be Transformers so bad and failed at it. Peter Berg kind of turned a bit of a corner, originally with The Kingdom, which is almost 10 years old. But then when he did Lone Survivor just a couple years ago, he really turned a corner because I think he found his niche. When you get these big, explosive movies, when there's no care to be given to the people it's about. Battleship, for example, are not real people. Battleship is a nonsense story about aliens attacking with giant plugs that look like the pigs in the game. Ridiculous. Same thing with Michael Bay with movies like the Transformer films. It's ludicrous and stupid and bombastic. But when Michael Bay did 13 Hours earlier this year, he showed real restraint with his ridiculousness. I mean, he still has the very big cinematic look to it. And there's still the slow motion shots and the hero shots. But he didn't make 13 Hours stupid the way he does with the Transformers movies. And that was because Michael Bay has such respect for the military that he didn't want to overly sensationalize them, even though it was kind of a sensational movie. And I feel that Peter Berg did the same thing with Lone Survivor. He didn't make that as goofy as something like Battleship because it was about real people and real people died. And I feel he did the same thing with Deepwater Horizon. I get the feeling with Deepwater Horizon, he wanted to be that fly on the wall. He almost wanted to be like Paul Greengrass in a movie like United 93, where it just sort of, it felt like the camera was along for the ride. I mean, he still gets very cinematic at times. But he gets very realistic in this movie. I mean, to the point that it's almost hard to follow at the beginning because there's so much jargon. I don't know how to run an offshore oil rig. And most people who are going to see this movie have no idea what's happening either. And we don't know what the safety protocols are. And it's such complex science and engineering that goes on. You cannot dumb it down. And to dumb it down would have made it ridiculous. So they throw all this jargon and technical stuff at you. But you get the picture that these people are trying to be safe and this guy from BP just wants them to do it faster because they're behind schedule and over budget. And it works. Surprisingly so, it works incredibly well. Because, like I said, you don't have to know what the test does. But when Kurt Russell's demanding there be a test and John Malkovich is saying, oh, no, we don't have to do a test for this thing. We got to make some money here. Then you know that something bad's going to happen, especially if you know the story behind Deepwater Horizon. And he has respect for the people involved. And yeah, it gets big and sensational, but there's respect. And I think that that's what makes this movie good. That's what makes this movie. It's a different movie than Lone Survivor, but it's Peter Berg directing a real life thing and Mark Wahlberg's a star. So I think it has a lot of connection there. But overall, Deepwater Horizon's a solid film and gripping. And I'm going to have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the Queen of Katwe. This true story follows the life of a girl from the Ugandan slums who learns to play chess to become one of the best in the world.
What is your name?
Fiona.
Could you please show Fiona how to move the pieces?
In chess, the small one can become the big one.
Why are you letting her win?
I'm not letting her.
You can see it moves ahead.
Checkmate.
She won.
You could be the best in all of Uganda.
Good.
How can I become a champion?
Sometimes the place you are used to is not the place you belong. You belong where you believe you belong.
One of the things I find best about this film is its presentation of the Ugandan slums. In a lesser movie, you'd be coming to these Ugandan slums and it would be so depressing you'd want to kill yourself. You would have rapes and murders and robberies and everything. But she presents it as saying, this is just the way that people live. And it's not crime 24/7. Yeah, there's some nasty things that goes on. You can see some violence in the background. You can see elements of that happening. But that's just these people's homes. It's sort of like if you live in New York, you know people are getting mugged. And you know people are getting robbed, and you know occasionally people get murdered in New York, but you may never come across that. And that doesn't mean that everybody living in New York is going to be a victim of murder in the next 20 days. And in the same way, anybody living in Uganda, this is just life, and it's poverty, but it's life. And I have a lot of respect for that. I also love the fact that we actually finally get to see Lupita Nyong'o's face, because she's a beautiful woman. And this is the third Disney movie that she's been in. Finally, we get to see her face because she was in Star Wars, but she was a mocap character and she was a wolf in the Jungle Book. Now you finally get to see her face. It's a beautifully vibrant movie. It's got great color. And I mean, it's gorgeously shot and it's very inspiring and it's very sweet and it's heart to the right place, but it is about chess. This is not Rocky where you're waiting to see the punching and there's no action to it. It's about chess, and especially with like the climax scenes and the big chess events that are happening, there's only so much excitement that you can put into a movie where two people are sitting on the other side of a board moving pieces back and forth and clicking a timer. So with that said, it's kind of dull at times. I mean, it tries like crazy and succeeds in a lot of ways not to be, but it was kind of a chore to get through for me. But maybe I'm just a Luddite. Maybe I'm just somebody who doesn't see the beauty in that. And I mean, it's great and it's wonderful and the story is uplifting and great. And it's got all the elements of the inspirational sports movie, except chess is a sport. Still, they do their best to get around all that. So I'm going to have to say, Queen of Katwe kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children and Masterminds. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare.
In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you. Let's continue with the movie reviews. Let's talk about Masterminds. Two armored car drivers hatch a plan to steal the loot they normally are entrusted to protect.
Kelly tells me y'all work together over at Loomis. That strikes me as an incredible opportunity.
You talk about robbing a bank.
How hard can it be? You load up a truck and you drive away.
Police are calling it one of the largest cash heists ever.
17 million misses.
Authorities are now searching for this man.
Look at him. Look like Kenny Rogers and Kenny Loggins had a love child.
This, first of all, is not the Patrick Stewart movie, nor is it a sequel to the Patrick Stewart movie, the kids movie that came out, 20 years ago. It's directed by Jared Hess, and he's most famous for doing Napoleon Dynamite. He also did movies like Nacho Libre. Last year, he did Don Verdeen. I reviewed that on the show. And Jared Hess is an anomaly in Hollywood because Napoleon Dynamite is very dry, and it is not Hollywood at all. And he has never been able to catch the fascination that people have had with Napoleon Dynamite for his new movies. And I think it was just that Napoleon Dynamite was a fluke. It was a charming little, weird little movie. And while I've liked some of his movies, I thought Don Verdeen was good. I actually quite enjoyed Gentlemen Broncos, even though nobody else on the planet did. His filmmaking style just isn't mainstream. It's not something that connects with a regular audience. So when you put him in charge of this movie, which in itself is meant to be a screwball comedy, you have a bit of a recipe for disaster. And I will say this, it's probably his most mainstream and most accessible film, because his other movies are incredibly high concept. I mean, Napoleon Dynamite's kind of out there. Gentleman Bronco's completely high concept and bonkers. And even like Don Verdeen last year was kind of a little bit odd, and it was juggling a couple things and none of which really has mainstream appeal. This one could. A heist movie, you can wrap your brain around that. It's got actually a pretty strong cast. It's got Zach Galifianakis, it's got Kristen Wiig, it's got Owen Wilson, and then it's got a supporting cast of like Leslie Jones and Kate McKinnon and Jason Sudeikis. It's a Saturday Night Live cast. You would expect with all these people involved that it would have a little bit more of a mainstream appeal, that it would have a little bit more of a regular Hollywood movie feel. It does not. This movie, first of all, it takes place in 1996, and it's based on a true story about this guy who actually did an armored car heist. The problem is, it feels like it was one of those movies made in 1996 that nobody remembered or cared about. It reminds me almost of like movies like Marcy X or Master of Disguise with Dana Carvey. These movies that are notoriously terrible films, movies that nobody liked, even when they were around, they have like 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'm sure there's some contrarian out there who loves those movies, but these are ones that are just resoundingly well known for being terrible films. And that's the way this movie was. I chuckled, I think, twice in this movie. There was maybe two jokes that I actually thought were mildly funny. The rest is at times boring, and at other times, painful to watch. And like I said, with this significantly well-known comedic cast, you would expect something different. Not that Zach Galifianakis or Kristen Wiig have never done bad movies before, because Lord knows they have. It's just this feels like it was a passion project that only person who got it were the people that were making the movie. It felt like a Saturday Night Live sketch that came at the end of the show, and it was just the last thing they had in their repertoire for that week, and it was just not very well done. Weirdly enough, it has three of the four new Ghostbusters in it. Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. Now, what's funny is Kristen Wiig's one of the main stars, and she's pretty good in it. I mean, for what she has, I mean, her material's terrible. Same thing with Zach Galifianakis. He does his Zach Galifianakis thing, but his material's not very good. But Kristen Wiig works in the movie, kind of going into a lot of her sort of standbys. But you've got Leslie Jones in there basically playing that overbearing, obnoxious, aggressive character she played in Ghostbusters, which goes back to my what I said about Ghostbusters, is that I don't think she has much range, and I don't find that character particularly entertaining. The real weird one is Kate McKinnon. She plays Zach Galifianakis' fiance, or his, ends up being his ex. I don't know what's going on with her. People went gaga over her. Not people. The neo-feminist reviewing press of 2016 went gaga over her in Ghostbusters. And I thought she did well in Ghostbusters. But I remember pointing out there's some scenes in Ghostbusters that don't really make sense. And what she does just seems strange. It doesn't even have bearing. She's doing stuff that doesn't even make sense pragmatically within the story. And I blamed it in Ghostbusters on the fact that it felt like Paul Feig just said, oh, just riff, just vamp, do something funny, do Kate McKinnon stuff, which is what a lot of times directors do. Like with Robin Williams, when Robin Williams was around, they just kind of let him go and he would do his thing, which I always thought Robin Williams was much better with the script. Thought he was brilliant with the script when he riffed and just did the Robin Williams thing. It was a stand-up routine, which I've seen a million times. But Kate McKinnon does these things. She like has this weird wide-eye, almost psychotic porcelain doll look in this movie. I don't exactly know what's going on. I don't know what the direction was, but it, again, makes no pragmatic sense. It's almost like she just took the role and she's, well, I want to make it interesting. And Jared Hess was like, oh, just be strange. Just do something weird. Don't, you know, and it's inexplicable what she does in this movie. It's almost as if these three women got together and said, oh, you for all you are complaining about Ghostbusters, you really want to see us do a bad movie. I mean, Ghostbusters is entertaining. But if you want to see a bad movie, check out Masterminds, because it is crap. And that's my review of it. It's nonsensical. It's not funny. The characters are awful. It's poorly written. It's not dry enough to be Jared Hess, and it's not mainstream enough to be a mainstream screwball comedy. So Masterminds sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Not a whole lot of time to talk about the next one, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. I'll tell you a little bit about that after we play the trailer. A young man discovers a group of unusual people living in secret and learns how to become their protector.
Because our abilities don't fit in the outside world, we live in places like this. To keep us safe, we create a time loop. A loop preserves the last 24 hours. Reset the loop and you can stay here forever. I knew you were one of us when you were born. It's time for you to learn what you can do.
I'm just ordinary.
No, you're not. You were born to protect us.
From what?
We call them Hollows.
You guys don't know what I go through sometimes to see movies. I struggle, fight tooth and nail. And a lot of times I have to go check out movies on Thursday nights because I do radio interviews on Friday morning. So I try to go see these movies. Usually, if the studio has some confidence behind the film, they'll screen it. But this is Fox, and Fox has a very spotty relationship with screening in Columbus, Ohio. So they didn't screen this in Columbus. So I was going to catch it on Thursday night, and I saw a double feature of Masterminds, and I was going to see Miss Peregrine's. And I go in, I walk into the theater, because I bought a ticket early, and I walk in the theater, and the lights are on, and they're tearing up the seats, they're cleaning, and she's like, oh yeah, we're not showing it. And by the time I got my refund and everything, it really wasn't time to go to another theater. And that was kind of like the last show. It was my last chance. I tried to see this movie. I kind of want to see this movie because I like Tim Burton. And this looks like it's a little more out of the box than his standard remake reboot with Johnny Depp. It's a little bit bizarre. It's very dark because it's Tim Burton. But it looks like it actually lives in his realm. And I was kind of excited to see it. But God and the forces of nature and technology and the overlords of the universe and the, you know, and everybody else in between conspired against me from seeing this movie. So I don't know. I'm going to have to say that this gets a preemptive suck because they never showed it to me. I tried, folks. I can't be perfect every week.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Clown Town, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back with Fat Guys at the Movies. Kevin Carr here at the microphone, getting ready to continue with the movie reviews. You like that music I'm playing? There's a reason I'm playing this music. It's not that I'm a huge Petula Clark fan. It's for the movie that we're going to be talking about here in a minute. Clown Town, which is the name of the movie. And what's funny is, before I even had an opportunity to see Clown Town, I would joke about it with my kids, because we'd have to go downtown for something. It's downtown, da da da. And then it turned into Clown Town, because I talked about this last week when I talked about 31, the Rob Zombie movie. Clowns are a huge thing now. Clowns have always been a thing, but what I find fascinating about clowns in this very specific context, scary clowns are relatively new. I mean, yeah, there have been scary clowns around for decades. But like 100 years ago, clowns were supposed to be fun. And I remember my dad talking about when he'd go to the circus, or he'd always thought clowns are creepy. And a lot of people have always thought clowns are creepy. And yeah, you see them show up in movies. And Carnival of Souls, I think, deals with that a little bit, if I recall. And they're sort of clown-like, the zombies in that one, the ghosts. There have been creepy clowns before, but I think when they started, like the P.T. Barnum days, clowns weren't as scary as they are now. But clowns have really had a resurgence and become more famous for being terrifying. And just recently, just this year, I mean, look at this. We got Clown Town, I'm going to talk about here in a second. We had 31. We had Clown, the movie about the guy who put on a clown costume and he stayed a clown. They're remaking It, which is, of course, Stephen King's book that the main character Pennywise the clown, who that's just a form the monster takes, but Tim Curry played him in the TV movie they made in the 90s. Then you throw in like violent clowns, like real life violent clowns, like Juggalos from the Insane Clown Posse. Or what's happening now are these people are walking around haunting towns as a creepy clown. And it's cool if you're just walking around looking creepy. I'm all for that. It's fall. It's Halloween time. I'd love to see a clown wandering around my street. Now, if a clown had a machine gun and was actually threatening to kill people, that's a different story. I mean, what is the open carry law for clowns? Are you allowed to be dressed as a clown? It makes you wonder. I mean, I don't care where you stand on the Second Amendment. If there's a clown walking around with an AK-47, it's going to make people nervous. So anyways, let's talk about Clown Town. Clown Town, da-da-da-da-da-da. A group of travelers stumble upon a small town in the middle of the Ohio countryside that is overrun with murderous clowns.
This town used to be a train hub years ago. It was a nice place to live. After that, there wasn't much to it. There wasn't much sense in sticking around, you know?
What about the clowns?
The clowns? Clowns are like a pack of dogs. The ghosts haunted this town for years.
Okay, first of all, I just want to let you know, I live in Ohio. And I've been all around the state. I've been to some weird areas, and I've been to some strange small towns, but I've yet to see a town that's overrun by murderous clowns. This was shot up in Cleveland, in the Cleveland area. I didn't know that until I started watching it, and I'm like, wait, that really looks familiar. And then I saw like Ohio license plates, and they're referring to it being, oh, we got to go down to Columbus. And it turns out it's in Ohio. It doesn't open in Ohio in a theater. It's like New York and LA, but it's also on demand. So there's a certain amount of hometown spirit I have watching this movie. Now, with that said, there's some good things and some bad things about Clown Town. Let's start with the good things. It does do violence and gore and sex. It gives you all the stuff that you'd want from a horror movie. You know, these clowns, when they kill people, it's not pretty. There's blood, there's guts, there's violence. It's a slasher movie with a couple crazy clowns. There's also a scene where they have an extremely gratuitous babysitter nude scene, which I fully appreciated. Don't get me wrong, I am a big fan of that. Since some of the imagery is really good. I mean, it's kind of hard to mess up clowns in terms of imagery, but it looks good. It's well shot, and I respect the heck out of it because it certainly looks low budget. It certainly looks like they had certain locations that were kind of in deserted areas. It didn't look like they spent a lot of money. They didn't have huge casts, and they didn't have a lot of locations. So it looked like it could have been done on the fly and relatively cheap. So I respect it in that level. And I mean, it's a clown movie. You want to see murderous clowns, you got it. On the flip side, it has its problems. The acting isn't very good. At times, the acting is so mediocre that I question whether it was deliberately mediocre or deliberately downright poor at times. It also covers similar territory to movies like 31. So I think, Rob Zombie's going to overpower them. I actually liked it a little bit better than 31 because 31's so nihilistic Rob Zombie. Whereas this one, at least it felt like a standard slasher movie. It, you know, really felt like a movie would have seen in the 90s, you know, something like Pumpkinhead 2 kind of thing. The acting's not very good. The writing's not very good. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because there's a scene where, like, oh, people stayed in their doors because the clowns were out, and then all the scenes they show of people getting killed during the daytime. Weird logical gaffes throughout the film. But as sort of like that direct-to-video, if you don't like clowns, it works. Oh, I don't know. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to give it a Kind of Rocks because it's Halloween. So, Clown Town Kind of Rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's real quickly talk about the box office. Last week, I said that The Magnificent Seven would do quite well into the mid-30s, maybe pushing $40 million. It didn't get to $40 million, but it did do quite well. It made $35 million on its opening weekend, which is quite impressive for what some of the numbers were saying it was going to do. And Storks struggled to come in second. It was $21 million, and then Sully came in third. Now, those are the only two big ones that were out, but it was a lackluster slate after Magnificent Seven. Magnificent Seven, that's definitely a triumph for that movie. Did extremely well. I was totally right on that one. This week, I think it's going to be a horse race between Deepwater Horizon and Miss Peregrine's Home. Somewhere in the mid-20s. Now, part of it is because Peregrine is still a hard sell. You know, Tim Burton hasn't had a bona fide hit since before Dark Shadows, arguably since he did Alice in Wonderland in 2010. And in his sort of his creepy style seems very 90s, but I think it's kind of lost its mainstream appeal. And so it's less trendy now. So even as much as Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children works in that context, it just may be past Tim Burton's prime. Now, Deepwater Horizon, people are predicting a little bit lower. I think it's going to do better because not only is it a well-constructed film, but it kind of brings the gang back together again from Lone Survivor. And that thing made, $37 million this opening weekend in January of, 2012 or 2013? It was a massive hit. And that's going to help this because they're like from the director of Lone Survivor and they got Mark Wahlberg's face on the poster. And it delivers on that. It's not like I said, compared to the 33 because it's another sort of disaster movie, but the 33 just it runs out of steam. This one, it builds to the end, and I think people are going to like this one. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. First of all, like I said, I'm going to give you a way to win your own copy of Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party, which arrives on DVD on October 11th, but you can get it free from me on DVD. Select winners will get a copy sent to them. All you have to do to enter is to send me an email at fatguys@themovies.com with the words Hillary movie or something thereof. If you want to say I'm with her or I hate Hillary, you can do that. Just put Hillary in the subject matter. I'm not going to have you. I'd say put Dinesh D'Souza, but nobody knows how to spell his name. So put Hillary or something with Hillary in the title, and you can make up whatever you want to say about Hillary in the title, whether positive or negative. Email Hillary about emails. And put that in the subject line. Send it to me at fatguys@themovies. We got a couple copies we're going to give away. Only open to U.S. residents in the continental United States, not P.O. boxes. So unless you can give me a street address, you can't get it. So please sign up. We're going to run this for about 2 weeks, and I'll announce the winners on a future show. Now let's talk about the movies that are out on DVD this week that you can check out. There's Warcraft, which is a notable bomb for this summer, but it did well overseas. Now is your chance to see what the big deal was, because nobody saw it in the theaters. There's also The Shallows, the shark movie with Blake Lively. There's Central Intelligence, which I liked a lot, which stars The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and Kevin Hart. There's Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, and The Neon Demon, and Grimm Season 5 are all available on DVD and Blu-ray. That is it for this week. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about The Birth of a Nation, The Girl on the Train, and Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.